Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Challenge Podcast. Now, today I have with me Dr. Tamara Hunter. Now, I will introduce what she does a little bit later, but what I just want to say, I can't help myself, is just explain that she is the winner of the August Challenge. Now, congratulations. That's the winner of the August Maxine's 6-week challenge. Well done. Oh,
thanks, Nick. Yeah, it was a little bit of a shock, but I really appreciate that. Thank you.
So, yeah, we'll go into that later, but we'd actually scheduled this podcast to chat together about something else, which is quite funny because we're having this chat now because you're the winner as well. So we're going to combine the podcast. It's like combining your birthday and Christmas all at once. But yeah, we're actually chatting to you because you are a certified specialist in reproductive endocrinology and infertility, and also you specialize in gynecology as well. So all sorts of women's issues. So you're an advocate and a champion for women all round. So yeah, we're going to unpack this and we're going to chat about all sorts of things, especially because in the Maxine's Challenge, primarily a lot of our demographic is 40 plus. So, you know, we're all in good company. And not only are we 40 plus, not everybody, but a lot of us, we want to be badass 40 pluses. We don't want to just sit there like our nanas might have, you know, starting to get the perms and things like that at this age. We want to lift some weights. We want to get PBs. We want to take pictures of ourselves in the gym. We want to see our abs. So that's what we're on about today, aren't we?
Yeah, love that. Yeah, women with confidence. That's what we want.
100%. Well, I mean, who better to help me unpack this than you? Because we'll dive into just a little bit of how you actually won this particular challenge. So just talk to me, because I mean, only really recently I spoke to you about your mindset in the last one, and I loved it because choose your heart is basically now your slogan.
Yes. But yeah.
Yeah. So how did you go to that next level? Like you had your veins in your delts, everything like that. That's next level. What happened? Where'd you go?
Yeah. So obviously I did the May challenge with a really emotional reason. For me, it was around the fact that I was in this position of pain and I really wanted to get out of that, and I knew I had to help myself. And so for me, doing the May challenge was very much about, okay, I know that the dietary management and the exercise is really important. I'm going to commit to this. And so the May challenge was very much about exploring, can I commit to doing these exercise sessions? Can I commit to sort of a templated nutrition plan? And exploring, could I do this over 12 weeks? Really establishing those habits. So when we got to the end of that, I actually felt a little bit lost. And that's why I like your deload programs, because it kind of keeps you a little bit connected to the habit. And in that period of time, I was like, okay, well, I now know that I can do this. I now could do this 12 weeks. I could do the 6 days a week of training. For me, it's at 5 a.m. in the morning. So I smashed that goal of, can I actually stop hitting my snooze button and get out of bed on a consistent basis to do this? So I'd answered a lot of those questions for myself. Mm-hmm. Now it was a case of, could I actually take this to the next level? Can I learn more about, I guess, the sport of bodybuilding, how I could transform my shape, how I can get greater hypertrophy? Because I kind of got over my fear of getting big, you know, that fear that women have about, oh, if I lift weights in the gym, I'm just going to get really big. Hmm. So for me, it was like, okay, I've gotten over that mythology. Can I actually now grow muscle in the places that I wanted to transform my shape? I actually had a trainer earlier in the year who is a female bodybuilding champion. And she had said to me, she'd put the idea in my head, what if you trained for a whole year? How do you think you could change your body in that time? And so she planted that seed. So I kind of started to grow that seed. I wanted to learn more about bodybuilding. I wanted to learn how to eat for the sport of it, go more than just, you know, nutritional templating, actually learn to eat for the sport. And so part of that for me was then attaching myself to a group of people who kind of knew more. I always believe that success leaves clues, right? True. And so for me, it was, let me find some people who know a little bit more about this. and can start to teach me about these principles. So I joined a group with the amazing Best Life Buddies with Kirsty Trappell and Sel Lawrence, who the most amazing, giving, servant-hearted people ever. Mm. And I just started to ask the questions and observe what they were doing. And I just started to, experiment with different training regimes, different sets and reps, different tempos, doing things faster, doing things slower, trying out some different exercises, experimenting, not just doing the same old thing, but actually trying a different way of stressing the muscles and stimulating growth.
Mm.
And then I wanted to understand a little bit more about sort of the whole concept of body fat loss and that shred that you often talk about with the winners of competitions. Wow, didn't they get such a great shred? I'm like, how do you get that shred? So I really wanted to explore that. And so then I went, well, we've got this opportunity to do it for 6 weeks. I'm just going to go hard. I had a really clear why. Let's learn more about this. And so I just went for it, Nick.
Mm. So how did you end up feeling at the end of it in terms of when you get fairly lean, how did you pull up? Did it feel okay? Are you maintaining that? Where are you at?
Yeah. So I won't lie, towards the end, it was hard. And I have such respect for people who do this competitively. Like, it is a real sport. It takes incredible hard work and discipline. So at the end, I can honestly look back at it and go, yeah, I gave that my all. I followed things to a T. I did the hard work in the gym. I did the hard discipline for the nutrition. But at the end, I felt fabulous. From an achievement point of view, I felt really proud of what I had done. So my confidence and the ripple effect of that, how that then affects all other aspects of your life, your relationships, your working environment. I just came out of it feeling on top of the world and like I could conquer anything. Gave myself a few treats, as you do, rewards. I'd actually booked in a dinner with my husband at my favorite restaurant as our reward for that weeks. And so we had an awesome night out. But you know what? I spent that next couple of weeks between the August challenge and starting in November, I kept maintaining the training. I kept the basic food principles. And you know what? I've just launched straight into the November challenge.
Look out. Look out. Look out. So are you influenced by Sel and Kirsty to maybe do a comp or something like that? Is that?
Oh, look, it has come up in my mind. My biggest why for this November challenge, though, is I actually think this is probably going to be the hardest one of the entire year. And I think that's because we're coming into the festive season. There's lots of parties, there's lots of events, end of school functions, you know, ballet concerts, sporting wrap-ups, the whole lot. Like, life for everybody is busy and chaotic at this time of year. And there was that moment of hesitation where I went, oh, it's just going to be a bit too hard. Just don't bother. And then the other voice came in my head, and that voice was, but what if you could?
Yeah.
And so for me, it was like, okay, Tamari, here's your next challenge. Life is throwing a lot of challenges at you right now, but what if you could maintain the discipline? What if you could maintain the dietary commitment? So, yeah, there is that little sort of voice in my head going, oh, could you do a comp? But I'm not quite there yet.
Don't worry. You surround yourself with them and it won't take long.
No, I'm silly watching.
Yeah, they'll be sending you some heels in the post and look out. But yeah, you know, success breeds success, and I think comps breed comps, and everybody who's crazy enough to want to do it, everyone hangs out with each other. But it's actually just, it's such a positive environment, because those things that are sometimes demonized by people, which is really looking after yourself, counting things, making sure that everything's precise, taking time to train in the gym, they're all absolutely celebrated in this community, which is, it's so nice because it feels warm and fuzzy because it's actually so good for you. It's so rewarding because you're really working on yourself. So yeah, you're in a good group there. They're very good.
Oh, yeah. Such servant-hearted people, such giving. Mm. It's just a pleasure to be around. And the nice thing about that, it makes you want to pay it forward to others.
Well, that's right. And like, speaking of that, the thing is, you actually studied to be an exercise scientist, didn't you? So it's not as though you don't have any background in exercise. You've, you know, you're quite able to help people yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, Yeah, I think I can tap back into that knowledge from a few decades ago.
Yeah, and I think also the thing with you that you've just got so much knowledge and basically have dedicated your entire life to women's health, fertility, things that people are just absolutely sometimes beside themselves to try and get answers about. And particularly sort of on our forums, we see a lot of questions around menopause, around perimenopause, around sort of this despair about not being able to shift body weight or not knowing what to do. Or we often see extremely low calories with a huge output in sort of exercise. But, and I'm saying that with quotation marks because it might be meaningless exercise. We don't even know. It's not even structured. So there's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah.
Do you see this a lot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think at least every clinic that I have every day, I've got two or three women that are sitting in front of me just not knowing what's going on with their body. I think menopause is really clear, right? It's, you know, 12 months, no periods, some symptoms, bang, you've got menopause. It's actually this perimenopausal period of life that women just have no clue. They don't understand what's going on with them. They might still be having their cycles, but all of a sudden they're snapping at the kids. They hate their husband. They're not interested in sex anymore. They've gained this 4 or 5 kilos and yet their physical activity and their diet hasn't changed. They're not sleeping through the night. So they're tossing the sheets off and they're just in despair. And often come into my room just absolutely desperate for someone to explain to them what is happening to them. I think perimenopause, it's one of the most challenging times of life, and yet it's something we just shove under the carpet and don't talk about.
Wow. And the thing is, absolutely, because we're sort of starting to understand a little bit more about menopause and look, putting it out there, but this perimenopause, it's just something that is just not talked about at all, really. If you hadn't done any research into whatsoever, you wouldn't even know that it was a thing. You would just think that, okay, you go through menopause, that's it. That's what our grandparents did. And then that's it. So, you know, we see people, for example, like let's go through a common question, you know, say, I'm doing everything I can. I've never overeaten. And now I'm actually putting on weight. Yeah. That'd be one that you get a lot. So let's unpack that.
Yeah. Okay. So first, I just want to explain perimenopause can last for months or even years. And it's time leading into the menopause. It's kind of hard to get your head around because you're not actually menopausal until you haven't had a period for 12 months. So it's kind of a retrospective diagnosis. But perimenopause, you can start to experience menopausal symptoms, and the menopausal symptoms happen as a result of low or no estrogen. And then you can have irregular cycles as well. So those two things together define perimenopause. A lot of women will go to a doctor and the doctor will do a blood test and they'll say, no, no, your hormones are fine. And they'll go, but I don't feel fine. You don't define perimenopause on a blood test. It's symptoms and irregular cycles. So these symptoms of low estrogen, they're really wide ranging. The ones we know about, hot flushes, that's fairly typical. But there are other things like mood disturbance. Sleep disturbance is key. A lot of women will have issues with sleep, and that's whether they've got the hot flushes or not. You and I know how vital sleep is for weight loss and muscle gain.
Yeah.
So this is a big key that I'll come back to in a sec. A lot of brain fog, concentration issues. They'll often have sort of what we call urogenital symptoms, so urinary frequency, urgency, which again contributes to sleep disturbance. And then sometimes even musculoskeletal issues, so crawling under the skin or joint pain or muscle pain, which can stop them from doing exercise as well. So you can see the range of symptoms is so wide. And I think it's that wide-ranging symptoms that then contributes to issues around either gaining weight or just the inability to lose weight. So there's a couple of reasons. The first one is, and I've done some sort of reading around this, so I don't think this is universally accepted, but there's certainly some data that suggests that estrogen is really important for the satellite cells that are kind of the precursors to muscle cell development. And so if you don't have a lot of estrogen around, then those satellite cells actually don't develop. And so therefore you don't get good hypertrophy to muscle. And that partly explains why some people get what we call sarcopenic as they get older. So they actually get atrophy and wasting of their muscles. So that's the first thing. They're not, their ability to grow muscle might be a bit more challenged. Mm-hmm. And you and I know how metabolic muscle is. Mm. And obviously the more muscle you've got, the more metabolism. And so therefore you're burning energy. So that's the first thing. Low estrogen can contribute to that. The second thing is that there are a lot of conditions that happen in this kind of decade or so of life that can also affect metabolism. So thyroid dysfunction, for example, up to 1 in 3 women will have an underactive thyroid. Mm. Your thyroid is really important for metabolism. So women might start to have sort of a waning in their metabolism because their thyroid might be a little bit underactive. Mm. They might develop sort of more musculoskeletal issues, which might retard them from doing sort of quite strenuous exercise. And I think the other thing that often goes unaddressed is the fact that in this time of life, our lifestyle in general is changing. So many of us might have teenage kids or young adult kids that are leaving home. So there might be more opportunity to go out with hubby, go out for dinner. It might be that you're in a position where you might be having a little bit more alcohol. We know alcohol's calorific. Sometimes too, careers are transitioning. So women might be transitioning from the home back to work. So they might be in a bit more of a sedentary role during the day, or even just a change in relationship with your parents. I certainly know I've become more of a carer now than I was before. You know, that relationship with parents changes. So life in general for women is changing a lot. Mm. And those things therefore affect our day-to-day energy requirements, our food consumption. Throw in the low estrogen, which as we said affects sleep, which we know affects the ability to lose weight. So you've actually got a holistic group of things that are potentially affecting our ability to lose weight. It's not unusual for a woman to come in and say, I've really gained sort of 4 to 5 kilos and my activity level hasn't changed. But when you dive into it, when you really dive into it, there are things that have changed in their life that have probably contributed to that.
Mm, that's very interesting. So how would you help somebody develop some strategies to start to kind of get their way back to where they felt their best?
Yeah, so I think it's addressing all of those things. So it might be that if they are perimenopausal and they've got a lot of menopausal symptoms, there's a fantastic scoring sheet. It's called the Green Scale Scoring for Menopause Symptoms.
Oh, okay.
You can see if you have a range of these symptoms associated with perimenopause. And it may be worth speaking with an endocrinologist or a GP or a gynecologist about whether or not menopause hormone therapy might be indicated. Mm-hmm. Then they're, you know, addressing the lifestyle factors. So the alcohol consumption, sleep. Like, I actually think sleep is an incredibly important aspect of health that often goes unaddressed because we think it's all about social. We think it's all about the sleep hygiene and the right temperature and noise and your electronics in bed, but there's a whole heap more that contributes to that. There are actually sleep psychologists out there that do this for a profession. So addressing why someone might not be getting their 7 hours of sleep a night, I think is really important. And then looking at all of those other medical conditions, I think that every single woman over the age of 40 should be having a well woman check with their doctor every year, looking at cholesterol, looking at sugars, thyroid function, stress levels, you know, mental health issues, anxiety and depression does go up. So it's important for us to address those things.
Mm. Now with the thyroid, with the tests, now there are different things that you need to look for in the thyroid test, aren't there? Because do GPs know exactly what to test for all the time, or what should people be asking for if they are asking for that sort of a test?
Yeah, so you can ask for a thyroid function test. So it's a blood test, a serum test, and they'll look at TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, which is the hormone produced by the pituitary that turns on the thyroid gland. Now, The interesting thing about thyroid function tests is it's a one-off test, but it's assessing something that has a changing release of hormones throughout the day.
So it might not be
a one-off test. It might be that that's something you address, I don't know, every couple of months to see if there's some fluctuation, because more often than not in women who become clinically hypothyroid, they'll actually have subclinical hypothyroidism for many months before that. So it's worth, if you've got persistent symptoms, to actually look at a serial measurement of thyroid function.
Ah, okay. Well, that's really interesting because, yeah, there are so many different tests that happens with. And then if you're not savvy or you don't know, you believe it, you trust, and you don't know to sort of unpack it a little bit further. But it's really good to know that that fluctuates. It's sort of like a cortisol test. It depends when you get that done as well, and you need that done over time.
Yeah.
You can't just rely on one bit of data. And I think sometimes, like, it's really helpful to have you explaining this because we don't know necessarily. We've spent maybe years advocating for our children in the medical realm, but we haven't thought about advocating for ourselves and what we need to ask for when we go into a GP, or what sort of things we should be saying other than just, I don't feel great. Because they'll probably just, you know, they don't mean to, but they're so busy these days that they might just do one test, but we don't know that we need another one. So, yeah. I mean, I love to, like, that's the base layer. All of that stuff is so important. And that's just to know what to ask for, to advocate for yourself if you need medical assistance. And then we've got, within the challenge, we've got strategies and things that women can do just on a basic day-to-day level that we can help them with. That's sort of within my scope. I can say, I think that this training suits you better, or that training suits you better. So as someone who studied this as well, like exercise science and stuff, would you recommend a certain type of training for women, you know, entering the perimenopause, menopause and beyond?
Yeah. So I come from a long history of freestyle aerobics classes. I've always thought about the cardiovascular stuff. It was nothing short of me to sit on a bicycle for an hour and cane myself.
Yeah.
And I know you've talked about this before. And so although it sat on the periphery of resistance training is important, I'd never actually embraced it personally myself until such time as I did Maxine's challenge. And in doing that, obviously, I've done more reading, I've learned off my mentors and sort of delved into that. And I've always known, and the evidence is really clear, that for women who are in their 40s and 50s, weight-bearing activity is really important for bone health. We know that. And it actually has to be ongoing. You can't just do a little bit and you're right for the rest of your life.
No.
You need to be doing weight-bearing exercise to put strain on those tendons and ligaments that then put strain on the bone and therefore maintain your bone mineral density. So that's really important. But what I also know to be true now is that if you build muscle, you are going to create a better metabolic environment within your body. So therefore, weight management is better. And you will also help to manage all of those other lifestyle-associated diseases such as abnormal cholesterol, lipids, sugars, so pre-diabetes, for example. So all of that metabolic disease is managed as well. So I am an absolute convert to women should be doing resistance training, not just weight-bearing activity, not just walking or running, but actual resistance, build the muscle hypertrophy kind of training for managing long-term health and disease, gaining strength around joints to reduce the chances of falls and trauma, as well as just our mental well-being and maintaining our weight.
Yeah. Yeah, see, the irony is most of us that are coming into that age group, we did grow up with the aerobics. Like, we did grow up in the 80s seeing, like, my mum was an aerobics instructor, that kind of a thing where it was championed. The more is more is more was just the thing to do. And I think a lot of us of the demographic that we're discussing, we have that mindset, and it's about really people such as yourself, people like me, anyone that lifts weights, that loves it, setting an example and just even visually just showing the changes in our body composition and physiques since we've been doing weight training, perhaps not necessarily focusing so much on the scales because, as we know, sometimes they fluctuate through building muscle and recomposition. So things like that I think are very important within It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because we want people to do something. We don't want people to do nothing at all, but it can be intimidating starting weight training. I know you've discussed it before, but some people might not have heard this. So what got you into weight training? Was it the challenge or was it before that?
So I first started really doing resistance-based training a couple of years ago. I'm sort of racking my brains. I actually think it was in preparation for my wedding, would you believe that? Because I wanted to create some shape for my wedding dress. I mean, that sounds so superficial, doesn't it? But a lot of people do that, don't they? They get into the best shape of their life when they're getting married.
It's so funny because when the chips are down and you want to be in the best shape of your life, you turn to the weights. Like the chips are down and everything that you've ever known, you're like, no, well, that's not what I want. I want those arms. And then you're like, I might actually do some bicep curls here. And then you're like, oh, hang on a minute. And now you're like Madam Shoulders. You're Dr. Delts, actually. That's the title of this podcast.
I think Cyril calls me Amazon Lady.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't want to take away his thunder, but I think Dr. Delts is actually better.
Love it. Yeah, so I think it was a couple of years ago, actually, because obviously I got married in my 40s, but it was a couple of years ago and I wanted to change my shape, but I was always fearful of that myth that I was just going to get too big. So I would always throw in a little bit of cardio in there just to make sure I didn't get too big, but I never did. Then obviously I embraced Maxine's and realised that actually you don't. And now there's all these little triggers that keep me sticking to resistance-based training. I recently was diagnosed with, can you believe this, at the grand old age of 47, diagnosed with congenital hip dysplasia, which is often diagnosed in children. And so sort of looking down the barrel of a couple of hip replacements in the future. But part of my rehabilitation around that is, if I build the strength in my glutes and the smaller muscles around my hip joint, potentially I can protect that and sort of stave off the need for a bilateral hip replacement. So it all keeps coming back to this resistance-based training, not only for physique, which was, I guess, the initial driver, but now also for health and vitality and quality, not just quantity of life.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, for anyone that's listening and they're in despair, and we've already unpacked what they should do, just so they've come to visit you, you've explained all the different tests that they might be on their way with, that they're starting in the gym, resistance training. How many days a week would you say is optimal for a new, someone that is going through this? How would you say? Would you say 4 or 5 or less?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think if you're first starting out, just know that you're okay. I think that's the first thing. You're not going crazy. A lot of people think that they're going out of their mind. But this is a, as I said before, it's a stage of life that is not well embraced, not well talked about. But you're okay and you've got your team around you. And that's what I love about this community. You've got your team around you that can help and support you. Just do what you can do. Obviously, with the challenge, it's very much about sort of 5, even 6 days of training per week. If you can't achieve that 6 days a week, it's okay. Do your best. I think everybody, ideally for habit formation, probably needs to do the majority of days in the week. So what would that be? At least 4 out of 7 days a week to really establish that habit. Because at the end of the day, behavior change is all about establishing a consistent habit. That's really what behavior change is all about. So aiming, I like to use the little tip, if you aim for 5 sessions but only get 4, you've done well.
Yeah. So, you know, shoot for the moon. I love it. So I did ask, that was an unexpected leading question, but you jumped on it perfectly for me, because the thing is, like, if someone's in despair, I mean, the icing on the cake is getting into that gym. Before that, even, it's exactly as you said, it's understanding that it's okay, you're not going crazy. It's sort of almost, it's normal to have certain symptoms and to need to address it, even if you've been somebody who's like, such as myself, haven't really hung out with doctors at all. Love them, but I haven't really spent that much time with them. I've kind of tried to fix myself with everything. I'm one of those people. So it's kind of, you go, oh, hang on, I need to sort of maybe look after myself in that way as well. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what you guys are there for. You know, I think it's like connecting with that community, as you said, finding a team that can look after you. And I think as women, sometimes we think,
oh, I've got to be everybody else's team, but I don't need more than one person to help me. But you kind of do, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I think women particularly are notorious for putting everybody else first and putting themselves last. And then saying to everybody, no, I'm fine. I'm just fine. And you're dying inside. So, yeah, you know, reaching out to the team around you, just doing a little bit. In fact, I like the saying, just be better than you were yesterday.
That's so, so, so true. That is really good because it means that if you had a bad day yesterday, it's going to be easy to be better. You just got to do one tiny little thing. And if you absolutely nailed it, then you set the bar high and you've got to keep moving. That's you now. That's you've set yourself quite a bar now. But the thing is, the best thing is you can use that to feed back to other people and help the community. And I know that, you know, you do dip in and out of the social support page a little bit now and, you know, post some of your stuff. And I'm sure that if people have questions around this podcast, when I post it, I'm sure you'll be able to dip in and answer a few of them, you know, as they come up.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Because knowledge is power, Nick. Knowledge is power.
That's right. And it's just because you've seen so much of it. This is what you live and breathe every day. It's so good to hear it from you because we can say it as well within our scope. But for you to actually say there are tests that can be done, there are things that can actually help you to feel better and function every day. So then you can be the absolute best version of yourself in the best years of your life. Like, are they not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, I come back to the fact that we live in this society which just sort of celebrates youth. And yet, you know, the physiology is we get old. We have to face the fact that we are every day we're actually getting older. And so you want to enter these menopausal years of your life with grace and style. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to know that this is a time of great wisdom. You're not being put out to pasture. And I think that's where Maxine's Challenge is awesome because you actually get to be your best self. You get to be powerful physically, mentally, emotionally, and not just wither away and die. And I think that's the big thing is that
I love that. Yeah. I love it. And also within that, you do get to be vulnerable, which is part of the journey, really. And you can be vulnerable and you can say, I did shit at this, or I feel crap here, but I'm still doing this. And like, I think that that's what's beautiful about the community, that we embrace people's vulnerability as well, where not everyone's perfect. You didn't win it by being perfect. You won it by thinking, how can I be better? What can I do better here? Do I just want to test myself that little bit further, one day at a time, that kind of thing. And that's the thinking that you have to have, whether you're first starting out or whether you want to see veins in your delts. It's that same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and also acknowledging that you have your hard days. I like the whole concept of failing forward. Mm. You know, often on social media particularly, you only see the tip of the iceberg. You don't see all of the work and the failings and the shortcomings that came to achieve that position. Mm. So don't worry, I had plenty of days where I was like, oh, I'm done with this. Mm. But like you've said in the past, just go to bed and start again tomorrow.
Exactly. It's always a new day. We always get a new fresh start. We can start fresh right this second. But look, I love our conversations. I feel like we're going to have one once a year when you win more and more and more. I like our little chats. But tell me, like, why don't you leave us with just Tamara's top three tips for women, just in general? Give us your wisdom.
The top three tips, gosh, they better be profound.
No, they're not. They're just whatever comes from your heart. That's the perfectionist in you.
Yeah. So I think the first thing would be to just know you're okay, right? In whatever you do every single day, know that you are okay. The second thing is nothing in life is achieved without changing. Mm-hmm. So if you want to change, then you actually have to change the things that you do. And part of change is getting uncomfortable. I know we've all heard it before, but we don't actually grow in our zone of comfort. Mm. We actually have to get a little bit uncomfortable. Like lifting weights in a gym, it has to be a little uncomfortable in order to actually grow muscle. The same thing goes in life in general. You have to be uncomfortable. And that's where doing a challenge is really good, because most of the time we're quite uncomfortable because we're doing something completely different.
Mm.
And probably the last thing is just live life with compassion. So compassion for self and compassion for others. I think the people that are most successful in life, I believe, are just those who think of others. You know, they're servant-hearted and they have compassion for other people. And that's something I've certainly experienced in this community, is just that compassion. There is one other thing, sorry, four, not three.
That's all right. I knew it because you did six, not five for the last one.
I can't stop. So to achieve anything, you have to do it consistently, day in, day out. And I think that's the big thing that I have really learned from beginning this journey in May, is that you just have to consistently do it every single day. There's no other secret sauce, Nick. I've been looking for the secret sauce, but the secret sauce is just get up, just hit the gym, just stick to the nutrition template, just continue to do that every single day, be a little bit uncomfortable so you know that you're growing, and just know that you're okay.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you so much. I mean, I could keep talking to you forever, but I really appreciate this, and I know that I reckon we're going to go number one in the Challenge podcast listens.
I hope so.
We're not competitive at all, are we? Like, even within our chat, we need to be number one. So I hope that everybody just comments on this and loves it. And thank you so much for your time today. Thank you, Tamara. Well done, champ.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend or leave us a review on iTunes to help us spread the good word.
See you next time.